Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Free Bruce Podcast. We're halfway done with the college football season, but we're only on podcast number 3. I'm Brian Fisher alongside CBSSports.com's senior college football writer, Bruce Feldman, the namesake. Bruce, how you doing?
Good, good. Back from a fun weekend in Eugene, Oregon, and got to see the Ducks, even without their star players, and see some of the depth they have. And it was a fun night to watch them against ASU.
Always a fun trip to go to the Northwest. Beautiful state up there in Oregon, and great game. Like you said, missing some pieces. LaMichael James was out. Darren Thomas, the starting quarterback, got hurt in the third quarter. What did you see from the replacements? Because it seems like they always have almost a plug-and-play offense. You know, one guy gets hurt, you know, okay, we'll sub in DeAnthony Thomas or Kenyon Barner, and away they go.
Well, I don't know if they were as good, but they were very good. I mean, Brian Bennett was a guy people in Southern California know quite a bit about. Crespi high school kid, you know, super athletic. I mean, he's wiry. He's not a big physical kid, but you're talking about a guy who was a standout triple jumper. He comes in. He's really an unproven commodity. And talking to Chip Kelly after the game, Chip, you know, said, I see it every day in practice, so I know what he can do. But actually being doing it in practice, even at the tempo they practice at, and then doing it a game when you got Vontaze Burfict staring across from you howling, and you got, you know, the ASU defense, that's in national TV, that's a lot different order. And he was pretty sharp. I mean, he didn't have to do a lot of damage as a passer, but in terms of making the right reads and getting acclimated and handling the speed of the game, especially the speed they play at, he did a good job with that. And I thought, you know, Kenyon Barner behind like LaMichael James has played so much that they're not interchangeable, but he's very good. He's a guy who would start at a lot of schools in the Pac-12, and you know, the option that they have in DeAnthony Thomas as this wild card to the offense. You know, he's been an impact guy right from the LSU game on. You know, basically, you know, he's after he gets over the fumbles, I just think you see, you know, he's big play every week. And those are good weapons for Chip Kelly to have. And now they have a couple of weeks where the schedule eases up before it gets into a heavy part of the Pac-12 deal for them. And, you know, it will be interesting to see if I expect Thomas and LaMichael James to get back, maybe not for sure this week, but definitely by the next week. And they should be in pretty good shape to roll on.
Now, this was labeled by a lot of people as a possible Pac-12 championship game preview. Obviously, Arizona State beating USC earlier, they're obviously ineligible, but you know, it seems like they kind of have a stranglehold on winning that South Division title. Are they going to end up playing Oregon, or has Stanford shown enough to basically win in a couple weeks in Palo Alto?
I'm leaning towards Stanford coming out of the North. You know, they have Andrew Luck, who's the best player in college football, a spectacular group of tight ends, and a run defense that's been really terrific. Now, they haven't played anywhere close to the competition they're going to see at Oregon, but the game is down there, and I think that, you know, they're going to give up some points against Oregon. Most everybody does, unless you have LSU's defense, you're going to give up a lot of points. But I think that Andrew Luck, I think he and the weapons he has, I think they're gonna just move right through and pick apart the Oregon defense, and I think they're coming out of the North.
Slow start for Andrew Luck against Washington State. Struggled through an interception early in the first half. Then the second half, he really got the tight ends involved. It was kind of a way that they go. Everybody talks about him being the best player in college football, but what are the other options that you see on that offense?
Well, they are so good with the tight ends, and it's not just one guy. Like, Notre Dame has a terrific tight end, but this is a Stanford offense that really has four guys, you know, three traditional tight ends who are, you know, ranging from 6'5", 250 to 6'8", 260. They all can run, and then, you know, they have basically an H-back guy who plays fullback, plays tight end, and those are just, they're different kinds of problems for defenses because it powers the running game, and it just, you know, Luck has a great rhythm for it. He has so many options that he can kind of react to that. I think that puts teams in a different place, because for a few years now, especially people in the Pac-12 have been trying to figure out how to get up to speed on defense to deal with what Oregon's doing. Here's a completely different set of problems that Jim Harbaugh brought to this league, and you know the way he's recruited, and obviously to have a trigger man like he does in Andrew Luck, you know, this thing is really interesting to see this dynamic compared to what you got in Eugene, Oregon with Chip Kelly's system.
You led off your big picture column on Sunday with another quarterback, someone who's kind of maybe gone under the radar nationally. Jacory Harris led his team back for victory. Ever since that second half of the Virginia Tech game, he's really come on of late. You talked about him doing much better.
Yeah, I mean, really, it goes even much further back than the Virginia Tech game. It goes all the way back to the K-State game. I mean, you're talking about a guy who has been more maligned probably than any player in college football right now. I mean, he starts out his career on an incredibly high note at Miami, where he leads them on a national television game to open it against Florida State. You know, he has some charisma to him. And then all of a sudden, some of the fearlessness that he had and displayed early on in his career really gave way to recklessness. And then there were some injuries and some, you know, he just kind of lost confidence, I think. And it saw it. And when I was down in South Florida this summer and visited with him for a while, you know, he was very candid with me about, you know what, I lost my spirit. Football wasn't fun, you know, and he was like, I had to look in the mirror. I couldn't blame other people. You know, maybe I could have said this to this receiver before he did this, or maybe we could have worked harder. You know, he definitely felt guilty about Randy Shannon losing his job. Randy Shannon recruited most of those guys from local, you know, from around the area in Miami to Miami. And there was a lot of expectations and a lot of talk, and those guys didn't deliver. And so after dealing with all that, I think you saw a guy he said, I was so afraid to make mistakes and throw interceptions that I was making them. And you can't play that way. You just cannot be afraid. And I think, you know, it's easier said than done to turn the corner on that. So he gets there, he gets a new staff to work with, and Jed Fish, who was an NFL assistant for the most part, aside from 1 year at Minnesota, really has done a good job of giving Harris the freedom to, you know, it's weird because you would think, why would you give a guy more freedom after it looks like he's struggling with what he had? Well, they gave him more freedom to change things at the line if he didn't like something to react to. And he said, you know, I feel like they gave me the keys to the offense now, and them having the faith in me and just saying, you know what, just let it all rip, just go out there and go play and you be who you are, has really, you know, taken off with him. And I think it helps that, you know, you see some of the younger receivers who had always been talked about at Miami, close to the program, but really hadn't produced in games. Alan Hearns, Tommy Streeter, those guys have blossomed. But I really think you're seeing now you see Jacory Harris is stepping into throws, and he's driving the ball, and he is not making the big mistakes that he had made before. And since then, you know, basically, he's, I think, the last, you know, three games or so, 10 touchdowns, zero interceptions. I mean, he's in the top 10 in passing efficiency. He's just playing at a different level. And this is probably the best he has ever played. And it's been a long time, quite honestly. I would have to go back to Ken Dorsey since Miami had a quarterback playing even this well. And it's not like he's playing like Robert Griffin was playing out of his mind, you know, unbelievably well in the first month of the season. But Jacory Harris is playing very well, and that is, considering all he's been through, that's a pretty interesting development.
Another ACC player from the state of Florida that's playing extremely well, Sammy Watkins. I don't know how much of the game you had a chance to watch, Bruce, since you were up in Eugene. 345 all-purpose yards for the game. Clemson rallies from 18 points down. He's one of the most exciting freshmen in the country, and I think a lot of people are finally starting to say, hey, you know what, maybe he should be get a little consideration for the Heisman as well, just because of what he's meant to this Clemson team.
Yeah, I think that was something that he started to build a buzz, you know, with his heroics. I mean, it's not just putting up big numbers. It was, okay, this team was down by, you know, more than two touchdowns, and here's a guy hitting one big play after another. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and obviously you being our recruiting reporter, you know, the guy's reputations, everything. It wasn't like this was like a two-star guy. You know, a lot of people were very excited about him, but seeing him, flash and make some great, make a great play here or there, or seeing him consistently be an impact guy are two different things. And that is really what has been so remarkable about him, is just, he has consistently been a difference maker. And, I talked to Chad Morris, the Clemson offensive coordinator, last week, and we talked a little bit about Sammy Watkins after the interview, and it was just, this guy is doing things you would expect a senior to do, not a true freshman, in terms of everything that, beyond just catching the football, in terms of the preparation and the understanding of what's going on around him. I mean, obviously he's got a great skill set, but all those intangible qualities, he seems to be off the charts in those too.
And he wasn't even the highest rated receiver coming into Clemson's class last year. That's one of the other things that you got to keep in mind. He was underrated, not only nationally, but underrated in Clemson's recruiting class. And another younger guy that's helped him out is Taj Boyd. And I've been very impressed. I think he was kind of maligned early on, but now he's really coming on to his own and really responded ever since getting injured against Florida State.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good fit for Morris's offense. It just, he's got really quick feet. He's got a good quick release. He's a physical kid, too. I mean, it's not like he's, 5'11", 170 pounds. I mean, he's a strong kid. He was a big recruit that, a lot of people saw as this guy who could be really good in the spread. And he, as you said, I mean, he's got weapons around him. He's making really good decisions. Chad Morris said this, last week, that he said, the thing that's great about him is he manages the game very well. He knows, okay, here I can just move the chains with my, by making a play with my feet, or here with this, or I'm just going to throw it away. I mean, those decisions week in and week out have been very strong for a guy who, he's really a first-time starting quarterback this year, hadn't played a lot of football. And so, to go in 3 weeks in a row and beat ranked teams, that's not easy. And to do it once is one thing. To do it, repeat it over and over again, that's the mark of a really good player.
Another player who impresses everybody physically and probably had, I think, the run of college football so far was Trent Richardson, that 76-yarder against Ole Miss. Now, yeah, we'll preface it by saying, yes, it's Ole Miss's defense, but the way he broke just like 10 different ankles, my jaw dropped when I saw that run, and I think you did too when you watched it on YouTube.
Yeah, and this is the kind of guy who, that was, yes, like you said, it was only Ole Miss, but at the same time, you saw him go for almost 200 yards, many of them after contact against Florida in the swamp. And they, even now, I looked and said, well, he has a chance to perhaps overtake Andrew Luck in the Heisman race, when he's going to have everybody's attention, a month from now when they play LSU comes into Tuscaloosa. Game of the year, the whole deal, LSU's defense, top five defense, the whole thing. Well, with that kind of run, and literally, I mean, you turn on the TV, you're going to see that highlight all week. I mean, it was that kind of deal. So not only does this guy have the statistics to back it up, I mean, he's doing what Mark Ingram did, maybe even more so 2 years ago. But when you have that where you're keeping people talking about you and you're on a top, potential BCS title team, you're in the Heisman race for sure. And I think, right now he's my number one guy. And we'll see if he can, I don't know if keep it up is the right way of saying it, but if he can, maintain this level of enthusiasm that people have for him, because keep in mind, the guy right behind, the guy next to him in the backfield, A.J. McCarron, is first-time starter, and they're leaning on him. I mean, yeah, they have a great defense and a really good offensive line, but Trent Richardson is the engine that makes that offense go.
That's Bruce Feldman. I'm Brian Fisher for CBSSports.com. This is the Free Bruce Podcast. Want to turn towards the next week in college football a little bit. And Thursday night, interesting Pac-12 game, UCLA goes to Arizona. We could call this the coach's hot seat bowl almost. I mean, Rick Neuheisel, he's obviously feeling it from a lot of fans with what UCLA is going through. Arizona already fired Mike Stoops as kind of the first midseason casualty. Who's the next guy that you think might be fired midseason, or at least is definitely on the hot seat? Is it Houston Nutt? Is it Bob Toledo? Is there someone out there that you see as he's on the hottest seat?
Well, I think it's any one of maybe four or five guys. I think Houston Nutt, you know, not only them getting blown out by Alabama, that's not a shock, but when you get blown out by a Vanderbilt, I think that, you know, and you lose as many games in a row, the issue that, kind of compounds it there is Pete Boone, the athletic director at Ole Miss, has been there a while. You know, from what I've been told, he's on really shaky ground there. He may not survive this either. So you have that. You know, in the case of Neuheisel, he's definitely on the hot seat. But when you look at the rest of the schedule, there is a way he could survive this. You know, it depends on how good the quarterback play is. You know, the defensive line, for as good as it looks physically when you see it, it really hasn't really been dominant at all. It struggled early in the year. If they can find a way to get that stuff together, and obviously they did, you know, they're still adjusting to a lot of the coaching changes that they had on that staff. You know, who knows? I mean, maybe they can, you know, go on a little run here. So I think while he's definitely on the hot seat, I think there's a way for it to pull back. It's not like they're getting blown out of games. Now, if they lose to Arizona, given all that Arizona's been through in the last 2 weeks, I think that would be a brutal blow for him. But, you know, I expect them to respond and win this game, and then we'll see where it goes. Bob Toledo definitely on the hot seat. I mean, it's not working out there. He does have some young players, but I think they're going to end up pulling the plug on him very soon. I think Larry Porter in Memphis, I'm surprised every week that we don't get an announcement out of there. I mean, I know it's early on, you know, it's only 2 years, but it's just been a disaster there. I think those are the places you look to first with the guys on the hottest seat. Another one to keep an eye on is Tom O'Brien at NC State. You know, he's been there a while. They have a bad defense. You know, obviously there's no Russell Wilson there this year. They're going to need to finish strong. I think those are the places I'm looking at right now in terms of the most unstable that are there.
I want to talk a little bit about the game that I'm going to this week, USC Notre Dame. Both teams really struggled kind of throughout the season. They haven't been very impressive at all. Neither team is ranked. This is only the 10th time they go into this meeting with neither team unranked. Turnovers, obviously, a problem for Notre Dame. Defense, obviously, a problem for USC. I'm not sure how this game even shapes up, just because both teams have never been consistent, and it's a rivalry game, so you know it's going to be close. But I was a little surprised to see that Notre Dame was favored by almost 9 points over USC in South Bend.
Well, you know what? There's not a lot of respect for USC. Anybody who watched them, even though they won by a sizable margin, you know, on the road against Cal, people just kind of shrugged their shoulders. Matt Barkley was not at all sharp. They didn't run the ball particularly well, although Curtis McNeil did give them a spark. I think their offensive line is right now the Achilles heel of this team. They just, you know, they have one terrific offensive lineman, and then there's a lot of inexperience on the rest of the group, and I think the cohesiveness isn't there. I think they're struggling. I think that, you know, for as good as Robert Woods is and as exciting as some of the receivers are, you know, you just don't consistently see it from that offense. Defensively, they're better than they were last year, but, you know, you just don't think that they've, you know, kind of handled anybody that good on offense. I mean, Nick Foles and a completely retooled offensive line, you know, moved the ball up and down the field and scored a lot of points on them. So now they're going to see Notre Dame, which has, you know, a great receiver in Michael Floyd, an outstanding tight end, two big-time tailbacks, and a pretty good offensive line. And I think that's going to be a challenge for USC on the road. I think the best thing that USC may have going for them is maybe Matt Barkley's not going to play two bad games in a row. And USC's speed, especially at the receiver, could give Notre Dame's secondary a lot of problems, because Notre Dame has struggled. I mean, Denard Robinson is not a good passing quarterback, but in the second half, you know, he was able to light up the Notre Dame defense because they couldn't make plays on the ball. Well, USC's receivers are better than Michigan's, and Matt Barkley is a better passer than Denard Robinson. So we'll see. We'll see if USC's offensive line can handle the Notre Dame defensive front, and we'll see if if Matt Barkley can attack there. I think Notre Dame is going to score points on USC. If I had to make the pick right now, I would go with Notre Dame. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I'm just, from what I've seen so far from USC's offense, I just don't know if it consistently can get it done to overcome, you know, an average defense.
I'd lean with Notre Dame as well. And a few miles to the north, you mentioned Denard Robinson, the defense that shut him down. Michigan State hosts Wisconsin. This might be Wisconsin's toughest test this week, heading up to Spartan Stadium, facing that defense, which is one of the top in the country. I mean, they are physical. This is going to be a big-time, smash-mouth Big Ten football game. And I think Wisconsin will end up winning, but this is certainly anything like they've seen the past couple games with that defense.
Yeah, I mean, they can run well. I think they're well-coached. And, those are the challenges. But, you know, nobody's been able to get anywhere near Wisconsin. I think the first thing you want to find out about them is what happens when they're in a fourth quarter. And how much of the pressure. I mean, they haven't really put anything on Russell Wilson at this point, and he's been very, very sharp, and they look like they're completely balanced, and they wear teams out. And, you know, I think it's going to take, you know, the best game that Michigan State can have to stay around for four quarters. But, you know, it is a home game for them, and I think that, you know, that they can run the ball. There's a lot of elements of what they do are very similar to what Wisconsin has built their brand on. So this will be an interesting matchup. I agree with you. I think this will be the toughest test because Michigan State has a much better passing quarterback than Nebraska did. And quite honestly, they have a much better passing quarterback than Michigan does. And then a lot of people in that league do. And they have a go-to receiver. So they have a lot of the ingredients that I think you need to do to knock off Wisconsin.
A good, not great set of games this weekend, but time to wrap that up and move to our guest and a pretty big name, I think, and one that just about everybody is interested in hearing from. Isn't that right, Bruce?
I'm glad that we have a great guest for this week on the podcast with Joe Castiglione. He's as good as there is in terms of athletic directors out there. He's been at Oklahoma for a long time, and we're excited to have you on. Obviously, so much going on with the conference realignment stuff. I wanted to ask you more of an open-ended question about it. From your side of it, what is the most frustrating part of all the conference realignment stuff?
Well, the time that it takes away from the most important reason we exist in college athletics, and that's to create an environment where outstanding student athletes can feel they could come and earn a degree and compete at the highest level and to enjoy all that goes with it, from the passion of fans to all the preparation it takes having a great program. I think that's been the biggest frustration, and it's happened quite often, and in our case even most recently during this football season where we were involved in huge games, and it seemed that during those particular weeks, we saw too much focus being placed on a conference realignment matters and not on the game itself.
How confusing is it from your side of it, where you just don't know what to believe? You don't know who's feeding who with information, and a lot of stuff that maybe was rumor now all of a sudden gets reported and people have, you know, believe it as fact. Is it tough, even tough from where you're sitting, to go, okay, I don't know who's talking to these people, and, you know, I just... You know, it's almost makes you very nervous about what gets out there now.
I'm chuckling a little bit, Bruce, not because I think it's funny or humorous. I just think it's so bizarre. We seem like our world has changed and now starts operating in ways that maybe we sort of watched, you know, in how Washington or politics at the national level seem to operate, in that there are so many different working parts to this, and we're getting away from the core problems itself and the people that can solve them. So that is, in fact, frustrating. Sometimes when you think you're dealing with very sensitive, very timely information, but not yet ready for public distribution, and then you hang up the phone or you leave a meeting, and within minutes or an hour, it seems to be going across, you know, a ticker or a scroll, or it's hit a website, and these sources are unnamed, but it's a little concerning that they have perhaps half or three quarters of the information right, but not all of it right, but yet the way it's being reported tends to shape the message, the concern, maybe fuel the fears that are out there about conference associations or how various institutions may feel about a certain matter. And that's been very challenging.
Joe, I wanted to ask, because obviously you're dealing with a new Big 12 commissioner in Chuck Nines now, but you've had a relationship with him prior to him becoming the interim commissioner, partly responsible for you becoming the AD at Oklahoma. What's your working relationship like with him?
Well, Chuck Nines is outstanding. He's professional in every sense of the word, but I don't necessarily mean that in terms of connotation with pro sports. He really, really understands our business and the people that are involved in the business across every different platform, be it, you know, the student-athlete perspective all the way through coaches and ADs, presidents and chancellors, and, of course, from a commissioner's standpoint. He has really been a calm, steady hand during a very tumultuous period of time. And yet he also brings a very fresh perspective. You know, he's been on the outside looking in and watching some of this unfold, and now he finds himself right in the eye of the storm, so he's been really helpful in that regard. And like you said, he knows a lot of the people in the business, and that's been helpful. And the way he deals is just very straightforward, very direct. We have operated in a way that we've told people what we're going to try to do, and so far we're moving forward in that regard and trying to create that long-term stability we all seek.
You're losing a member in Texas A&M. You could lose another. But what is the future of the Big 12 from your perspective?
Well, it has been good, Brian, and it continues to be very good. If people look and see how successful the members of our conference are right now as we speak, and, you know, we've competed well for championships in every sport in which we sponsor. Financially, you know, the league has been strong. And that's part of the frustration that, you know, people have, you know, talked about the league in ways that really aren't consistent with what's really happening, what the kind of example that we've set. And when we've faced the departures of two schools about 14, 16 months ago, whatever it was, with Nebraska and Colorado, and then again, in the midsummer with Texas A&M, you know, it's very disturbing because we seem like we're doing our work the right way. We seem like the reasons why we come together as a league, and should come together as a league, are appropriate. But for whatever reason, different institutions seek different things, and so they've departed. To another conference, that is. And so we're trying to work on things that strengthen our league going forward. And if we can get Missouri to, to decide and commit to our conference long term, I think we can now, then move forward to things that help grow the conference. One thing we did really well during those first years of the Big 12 was to be different, to be innovative, be creative, not worry about having a little bit of a maverick kind of reputation, if you will, because we weren't afraid to try new things that would advance our ability to create that kind of great environment for student-athletes, stand for the right things, do things with class and integrity. You know, we did those things well, and there's no reason why we couldn't get back to doing them again.
Joe, being a guy who had, obviously been at Missouri and, spent some time there, looking at how the landscape has changed since it was from the time you were there, is there something that you look back and go, I know that, the dollar figures and everything else has grown. What are the things you probably miss most from that era of things, which is, about a dozen or, now 15 years ago or so?
Well, back then we were finding ways to look at the strengths, performance, the opportunities that we had that made sense and stayed with the collegiate model that we all want. and we could find ways to monetize those. And the success of the conference created the value, and the value obviously was determined in the eye of the beholder and what it was worth, you know. And sometimes there were factors that played into that. Obviously, you know, the league itself, the footprint of the league, the passion between fan bases within the league, the success of those teams, the population, whatever. And those things are still possible, still present, but it seems that other things are tugging at us and pulling at us, and for whatever reason, they've become divisive. And I remember, you know, coming together as a league back when we formed the Big 12, there were 8 members of the old Big 8 and then 4 members of the Southwest Conference that were leaving a conference. And it was a little bit of an adjustment culture-wise, because, you know, 2 very strong-minded groups came together, but we formed a new league. It wasn't the expansion of the Big 8. It was what we tried to create as a new league and mesh the histories and traditions of all the schools together to go forward. And I really didn't like the idea of north-south in terms of divisional alignments, because they drew the line sort of because of that geographical, natural sort of footprint. But the idea in itself made it kind of divisive. You know, we were one league, and quickly we did away with that in basketball, but we really never did in football. And I understand the bracket standpoint, but it seemed that people were characterizing, you know, the one division or the other and sort of taking those characteristics and applying them in ways it shouldn't. You know, the North was this and the South was that, and we just really had a bracket to try to create, you know, a natural championship, which was not unusual. I mean, the SEC at that time was the only other conference that had 12 members, and of course since then other conferences have grown. The ACC was the, you know, the until this year, you know, the most recent to have that conference championship. So we've learned, you know, we came together, we made it good, and in fact great, and had many national champions come from our conference in the sport of football or any other sport you want to cite. So, you know, I think about those times and what we did and why we came together and what worked. And if you looked over the 14, 15 years, the success of the league has been terrific, and each school in the league has done exceedingly well since that time. And that's why, as I mentioned earlier, it's, you know, ridiculous why the focus went away from that and onto some things that really shouldn't create the, you know, that divisiveness in our league.
Let me just ask you the last question and get away from the realignment stuff for a second. And so many guys in your position end up hiring first-time head coaches, and it may end up blowing up in their face. You're one of your first big moves at OU is bringing in Bob Stoops, and obviously that turned out pretty good. What is the biggest difference between, you know, why a guy like that worked out, and what did you see and say, okay, this quality, maybe more than any other, is why this guy, you know, has turned out to be such a great coach, when, you know, you just don't know until they're in that position of running the whole show?
Well, as we know, Bruce, hiring is an inexact science, yet we're expected to make every pick perfect. It's whatever happens, it's supposed to work out exactly the way it's planned, and we know that's not true, but we try to use everything from expertise, you know, an understanding of the situation, at least the best as we had it. You know, when I was coming to Oklahoma, I arrived in midsummer, and then, you know, we made the coaching change in late November. So I only had 4 months, you know, on the job to really understand what was really needed here. And so, you know, I can't say that I was perfect in every estimation by any means. I was doing the best I can, had a great president who was very supportive of thinking out of the box. He's been very involved in thinking out of the box in our conference realignment and trying to build consensus. And it wasn't that Bob was an unknown coach at that time. He had several opportunities to become a head coach prior to the time this opening occurred, and he turned those down, or just elected not to go forward with him, whatever the case was. But and he also had his alma mater open at the same time our job was open. So we knew he was, you know, he was going to be highly considered. But there were so many things about Bob Stoops and checking him out, you know, through the years, even going back and to, through, you know, his life growing up in Youngstown, being the son of a coach, being in a very sports-oriented but very close-knit, high-character family, to him becoming a captain during his playing days at Iowa, you know, to, you know, the opportunities he had, always in a position to lead. And of course, you know, his pedigree in coaching grew from there, and going to Kansas State on staff of Coach Snyder, and then, you know, with Coach Spurrier at the University of Florida. So his pedigree was just simply outstanding. But I really think back to, you know, what separated him as the only assistant that we interviewed at the time, and that was just his ability to visualize the type of program that he could build and be part of the architect of building, and the way he was going to go about making that happen. You know, he just demonstrated so many credible leadership characteristics that you look at his performance and his training and the mentors that he had, all those kinds of things, and several other things, you know, obviously help validate, you know, his preparation. But he just seemed to be wise beyond his years because of his ability to relate and connect with people and get people in the right place, doing the right things at the right time. And, you know, the background checking that I did with many people throughout the industry, whether it was coaches or people he interacted with coming up through, you know, the ranks, or even the media that worked with him during stops, particularly as coordinator at Kansas State and at Florida, you know, it just all connected, and one thing would validate the other. And I just think he was a very special breed, if you will, and it was a special opportunity for us to hire him as a head coach. And we all know that you'd like to be able to predict a coach is going to win a national championship in their second year. And it's happened, you know, other times, but I don't know that anybody can, you know, really, truly accurately predict that. But you could certainly see how and why Bob Stoops was going to be successful and be successful for a long, long time. And we couldn't be, we're just so lucky to have him and continue to have him as our head coach. It's, as an AD, I couldn't ask for a better person to work with on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, his success as a coach and the consistency he has had during his 13 seasons as head coach is beyond amazing, just absolutely phenomenal. But he'd be the first to say he doesn't even want that kind of credit given to him, because he's always deflecting the credit to first his players and, of course, his assistants and anybody else that's been involved in helping our program reach that level of consistency. And again, we're just so fortunate to have him as our leader.
Bob, obviously doing a great job this season, has the Sooners ranked number one overall in the country in the coaches poll. Joe, for you as the athletic director, what are some of the challenges you see out there when you have that top-ranked football team?
It's just trying to make sure we're doing all the right things to position our program the best possible way. Obviously, it starts first with people, and an athletic director's job amongst its many responsibilities is hiring, retaining, day-to-day management, leadership, motivation, oversight of our staff. And that is the one thing that sets our program apart, I believe, because we have an outstanding staff, not just in the football program under Coach Stoops, but head coach to head coach throughout our entire athletic program and their staffs, and my own administrative staff. Everybody works together for one common purpose, and that's another part of the AD's job, is to, you know, to have the vision that is consistent with that of the institution. In fact, I believe our mission and the institution's mission are intertwined. We've had great leadership. Not many schools can say the president and the athletic director and the head football coach have been together for 13 years. Not many. And we've had great administrative support from our president and the board, and so that is obviously paramount to any kind of success that we have. And then, you know, trying to do the right things and finding resources and raising money and working on having, you know, the right kind of staff to serve our student athletes and interact with a passionate fan base. That's probably 48 hours worth of work in a 24-hour period, but that gives you some sense of it anyway.
Joe, we appreciate you joining us. Obviously, it's been pretty chaotic time, I'm sure, for you and every other administrator around the country. But it's always good to catch up with you, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Well, Bruce and Brian, thanks for having me on. And it is a little bit chaotic, and at some point we'll probably look back and characterize these kind of historical changes in a different way than maybe we are going through it. But hopefully we keep the most important things in mind and why we're in this enterprise we call college athletics and keep leading young people to do the right things and give them that great kind of experience. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks again.